All right, we're about to go around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. But before we do that, we got to do the thing that we do on Tuesdays, which is welcome in the man himself from Hiram Clark. It's Brandon K. Scott. B. Scott, what's popping, brother?
Man, I'm just in a much better mood now. I'm so glad that we're doing the show that I'm on at 11 o'clock in the morning, as opposed to, like, say, right after that game was over last night. Because that wouldn't have been very fun to talk to, wouldn't have been very entertaining. But I've had enough time to sit on it, to sleep on it, and to allow it to all marinate. So I'm doing a lot better than I was, say, 12 hours ago.
All right, so save those thoughts, because B. Scott's thoughts are coming here in just a little bit. Did you want to weigh in at all on the 100 men versus a gorilla at all? Especially, I think we settle on 100 Brian Cushings? Somebody else said 100 Hulks. I'm guessing they mean Hulkmania.
Yeah, so that's not a man, though, right? Because you got to have the serum. I was like, look, if the serum is not real, right?
No, yeah, it's got to be a man.
Yeah.
Someone said Lawrence Taylor, but he got to have his superpowers.
Okay, so that type of serum,
yeah.
You're going to need some type of serum, okay? And whether it's, you know, illegal narcotics, or if it's actual, like, you know, made-up serum from the superhero movies,
yeah.
You're going to need a little bit more than just man. I've actually thought long and hard about this.
I expected.
Like, yeah. my initial thought, though, was even getting 100 men to agree to do it is wild to me.
That's the one.
Like, who are the 100 men that are like, yeah, I'll go out there and be like one of the possible men and likely men to get killed by the gorilla, you know, in the course of this. Because I think that maybe 100 men could do it, but how many men got to die before
you get there? I said 30-40%. That's a lot.
I don't want to be one of the 30 or 40 or 50 men that got to die for this mission to get accomplished. So I'm not signing up for it. How do I know I'm
going to be 100 B. Scotts?
No.
100 B. Scotts is too small. I could have told you that.
No chance.
Because here's the thing.
And you're not going to get one B. Scott to agree to it.
That's
all. Every B. Scott in every universe. What is the metaphor? What is the
multiverse?
Multiverse. In every multiverse of B. Scott, everyone will refuse. All versions of me.
I do want to say, I actually think that it would be easier to get 100 to agree. It's actually scarier in that circumstance, because those 100 agree, and then they get into that moment, and they're like, I have made a grave mistake.
I said yes to this.
No, but I do love what people have done on the internet, like with the Texans saying, hey, well, how about 100 Brian Cushing?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I've seen others give, like, they're like, hey, give me the 80s Pistons. Give me, Kimbo Slice. I know Kimbo, rest in peace to Kimbo Slice.
Right.
And give me Solange. Like, people are like being funny about it, you know, because how she was in the elevator with Jay-Z.
She
like,
gave him
me people that you know are about that life. 100 of those, and let's go.
Respect it.
I do respect it.
Someone said, I don't need 100 men. Give me Will Anderson Jr., Aziz Alshayer, Danielle Hunter, and we good.
Hey. Right.
Your defense would stink then.
Yeah, not all them coming back.
Yeah, because they gonna show heart, but they gonna get dead.
All right, let's talk about some football. I guess
we would know the draft needs next year. That's for sure.
Damn shame what happened to that Will Anderson Jr.
Yeah. All right, not a shame at all what happened to George Kittle. George Kittle, now the highest paid tight end in the National Football League, on an average annual value of $19.1 million compared to the $19 million average annual value that Trey McBride got. They finally got it done.
Mm-hmm.
George Kittle becoming the highest paid player with a 4-year deal. Does this matter at all to you, or like? Because I'm amazed that they actually paid him. Like, I thought the Niners were coming up on that time period where you go, oh, I don't know if we could pay all these dudes. Of course, it feels like George Kittle is somewhat foundational to what they do. But they're finding ways to pay some of these dudes in a way that I'm starting to wonder, like, okay, how are we back in the place where we're willing to go, the salary cap isn't real, you just need some massage?
Nah, the salary cap is real, but I think the other part is also true, that you just really need to, like, you just have to be smart with it. It's real, but you have to be smart with how you navigate it. That's why people are in those particular positions. But imagine this, if you were a 49ers fan and you lose Deebo Samuel, you're not able to come to grips with or come to a decision with George Kittle, and then you're going to end up paying Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Like the Brock Purdy
and Brandon
thing.
Brandon Ayuk.
Yes, I'm saying the Brock Purdy and Brandon Ayuk thing only works if you still got all of the superheroes around that, right? And of course, you made the decision on Deebo, which I think is a fine decision. I think he'll be fine in Washington, but I get why you would move off of that if you're going to stick with Brandon Ayuk, but you can't get rid of George Kittle, who's actually your best offensive player.
You know, you were mentioning that, does it matter to me or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
We have a tendency, all of us, to sort of localize it and personalize it to like our situation.
That's right.
has it's apples and Volkswagens.
Yeah, I was trying to see if I can get that there.
When it comes to the Texans, there is no. Oh, what does it mean? It doesn't mean a damn thing for Stover or Schultz
or
anybody.
I mean, honestly, it would be very nice if you had some level of comparison because you had a player of that caliber, but unfortunately you don't have a tight end of that space. Like, how are we feeling about the tight ends going into this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's the one position group that has been a disappointment now for, like, I think you got decent play out of Dalton Schultz in the first year.
Year one, mm-hmm.
But I don't think anybody, like, even when he signed his extension, people were like, oh, yeah, I could have done without him. Like, it's just a very ho-hum, underwhelming position group overall, even if you do like Cade Stover, which I do. I just don't know. I don't know how much he's going to be prioritized or what exactly they're going to ask from him in this. Honestly, it's one of the interesting parts about the new offense, right, because the new offensive coordinator does at least specialize
his whole career
in coaching tight ends. Now, how is that going to translate into the offense that he designs or the plays that he calls? I do not know, but I know that I'm not, like, overly impressed with that position.
Yeah, I alluded to it yesterday. It's kind of been overshadowed by the offensive line. It's offensive line light. Like the questions we have for the offensive line, are they good? Are they, you know, are they kind of, you know, injury prone or sliding or whatever? You can say the exact same thing about the tight end room.
Yeah. Well, I would say just even overall about their, and I know their running statistics look better last year because they had Joe Mixon for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But just overall as a kind of as a run blocking outfit, it isn't just the offensive line. It extends, when you hear them talk about it, it extends beyond the offensive line, and we can see it with our own two eyes. Mm-hmm. Dalton Schultz out there not really necessarily giving you exactly what you want, Cade Stover being a rookie last year. But from the line itself to the tight ends and then even the wide receivers, I thought, weren't as good as they had been in previous years in run blocking. So that's something that they overall got to attack. But that room, it's a less talked about and less priority position group.
Yeah.
But I think it is just as – has just as many question marks as any other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of what's happening there. So I guess salute to George Kittle getting his money at the very least. I'm very intrigued to see like what this Niners team is able to do as they find themselves clearly on the backside of what this like, you know, peak is, how long they're able to extend that window of some level of contention, because they're also a type of team where they get to the end of this window and they might be talking about disappointment, considering even though they were good for a long time, not necessarily getting to that pinnacle. Yeah. Being a problem.
They went defense in the draft. They drafted Ricky Pearsall last year, who we know had a real scary moment, but it ended up recovering from that.
Right.
So he's got some potential to help them offensively. Obviously, this Kittle move that we're talking about now, and then in the draft, they went defense. So they still are operating like they're right there. We'll see what they actually are.
You have to operate in that way from the 3-4-6. 100 men already facing death. Bye-bye, Silverback. I like what they're doing there. Like they're putting the hypothetical situation where
death row.
Yeah, we're gaming this. I imagine it's like if you live, you can make it out, right? Like if you can manage to get this done. But I don't know. Does that help or does that hurt? I don't know. I'll circle back around
to
that.
That's rough, man. I just imagine being like the 50th guy who watched the first 49 go, and I'm right there in the middle. It's like, nah, bro. Just don't feel like
that's
it.
That's like that game on Netflix. Or what's that show on Netflix? The little game show where they.
Yes.
How did I forget the name?
Squid Game?
Squid Game. Yeah. I was about to say Endgame, but Squid Game.
If you could get like 15 to 20 to attack every limb. Like, we got to all attack every both legs
once.
And both hands at the same time, and then somebody go for the head.
Yeah.
You can devise a strategy.
Who are the volunteers to do that?
God bless. God bless.
I'll volunteer a strategy, but I will not be out there.
As a brain trust, we'll be over here. I'm C-suite. All right. At the risk of beating a dead horse, like I imagine a silverback gorilla would beat you with your own dismembered body, we bring you to Shedeur Sanders once more because, interestingly enough, this is around the NFL, but I'll expand it to around the football of sorts, because the CFL's Toronto Argonauts added Shedeur Sanders to their negotiation list after he slid in the NFL draft.
I love this.
Why do you love this?
I think it's brilliant for Shedeur Sanders. It's certainly brilliant for the CFL and the Toronto Argonauts. And let me explain. If you're Shedeur Sanders, you got five quarterbacks in that room and you got a little negotiating power now, because the Argonauts, they did this just yesterday. They put him on their negotiation list, which means they can pay him and they can make him, you know, their highest paid player. He goes full Warren Moon from back in the day, goes to Canada, throws for 8 million yards or whatever, gets some game experience that's guaranteed. I'm not saying he should do it. I'm saying I think it's a brilliant possibility. And then think about it from the CFL perspective.
Oh, yeah.
That's Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, no, that's obvious.
That's
from the
Caitlin
CFL
Clark.
Standpoint.
I mean, the ratings, the attention, the rating, the television coverage in this country. I mean, I think it's something to think about.
Yeah, I think you could make the argument that in 2025, Shedeur Sanders is more famous than the Canadian Football League.
Sure.
So yeah. I think bringing in a player, a singular player that's more famous than your entire league, your entire concept, is great for you. So check that box. That part is obvious. But then for Shedeur, I just really thought about it as you were kind of laying it out. I'm like, if I'm Shedeur Sanders, would I rather be among a crowd of middling quarterbacks but still not sure if I got a legitimate shot because they drafted somebody that I might be better than ahead of me?
Yeah.
Or would I rather ball out and see it? Like, would I rather do this in Cleveland and with the Browns, who are a disaster as an organization? Sorry, Figgy. But would I rather
do
that?
You got to apologize to me. That ain't my team.
You know what I'm saying?
You said it's from around your spot.
I ain't trying to poke fun at Cleveland, but you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. The Browns, man, they on some other stuff. Do I want to do that?
Bigger
if I'm
field.
Or
they pass
Canadian
on just
league.
About every down.
Yeah.
Bigger end zones.
Yeah, this is an option. Yeah. This would be an option if I were him. Let me put it
I agree with you.
I don't know what he's thinking or what his aspirations are exactly. But if I were him, I would think about this.
Yeah. I think if you end up in a place where somebody trying to put you on the practice squad, this becomes a conversation. I don't think that we're still in that same era where that crossover works in the same way, where the NFL is going to go and reach back to the CFL and bring folks over, especially as we're already seeing, it seems like the reason why he dropped is people got a problem with him, right? I don't think that they're going to be like, well, he's so good over there in Canada that now I'm going to put those things to the side. Like, I feel like you're going to have to ball in the context where it makes it undeniable, which is the NFL in a circumstance where, yeah, either you go and win a position or you take a position after someone is injured or something like that. That feels like the path forward. If you are trying to ultimately use this as a stepping stone to the NFL.
It's clearly a different environment. But the situation of Shedeur Sanders is almost identical to CFL quarterbacks that had to go prove themselves there. Yeah, and I put together a little list. Joe Capp, undersized Hispanic quarterback that nobody thought could play in the NFL, played in the CFL. Doug Flutie, undersized, amazing star, very much like Shedeur Sanders, had to go prove himself in the NFL. Warren Moon, for obvious reasons back in the day, had to go prove himself as an African-American quarterback, played in the CFL, came to the NFL. Like, there are some similarities here. Jeff Garcia had to go to the CFL in terms of, like, what you're perceived to be, and then you go prove them wrong in the CFL.
Yeah, see, for me, I'm just kind of even looking at it from a different standpoint of doing it out of spite. Now, and I'm not applying this to Shedeur Sanders. I don't think he thinks this way. If you're just putting me in his shoes, I say, well, in the hell with y'all. I was born rich. Mm-hmm. I don't need you, NFL. Mm-hmm. Now, he might have the actual competitive nature of, hey, I want to be a great quarterback in the NFL, and I respect that. But I could perfectly go to the CFL and be out of sight, out of mind, or just be famous over there and say, well, hell, what y'all got going on in Cleveland? Like, I would be perfectly fine with that. Mm-hmm. But I'm also not a hyper-competitive. There's a reason why I didn't make it to that spot.
Because
I'm not here for that.
Right.
I don't need that.
And, I mean, to his credit, or I don't know if it's to his credit, because I think there's people that have already had questions about, like, character, what have you, or, like, you know, arrogance. I don't want to, like, dig too deep into that.
No, those are fair.
But he seemed to, like, when he was drafted, take it from a place of celebration and just, you know, still appreciating the opportunity. So we'll see what he does with that opportunity when
this is like alternate universe, you know, alternate universe. What if he doesn't want to do this? Like, he does have this as an option.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't run from the grind, though.
Do you think CFL? Wow. Wow. Okay. Do you think CFL is more of an option, or would UFL be in terms of proving something to the NFL?
I think CFL would be more of an option in terms of...
Even as the NFL is sidled up to the UFL a little bit.
Yes, because I think the money for your top... They don't pay very well.
No.
But their top-end players, they pay very well. Okay. And they the field. Like, they pass first, second, and third down.
and I think, like, it's the weirdest thing, because you're marrying football analysis with, like, fame. And I wonder, like, how much of Shedeur Sanders, like, are we talking about football, or they're like, hey, man, the juice is just not worth the squeeze. We don't want we don't want our marginal players to be that famous or that loud or that boisterous. I feel like that's a lot of what's happening here. Not just, hey, we don't like him, but is the juice worth the squeeze? Like, how loud can a fifth round pick be? How loud can my second or third string quarterback be?
Mm-hmm. And it's such a interesting conversation because it gets to the heart of what football need, in some ways it feels like it needs to have like an authoritarian kind of hierarchy, right?
Yeah.
There needs to be authority imbued simply because you are the head coach or simply because you hold whatever rank you do in the hierarchy. And it seems like the NFL and maybe football at large is bucking at the idea of you start down this road of guys maybe walking around as if they feel like they are above the hierarchy to some degree. And now are we shaking the foundations of what we have here? Mm-hmm. And I will admit, I was thinking about this morning. I actually do subscribe to some of this in a way that I typically wouldn't think that I would. In the way of, I always talk about if you're going to be a backup quarterback, the biggest thing you need to be is likable, right? Because you're not out here proving yourself based off of your merit, like off of your football playing, especially if everybody around here wants to be happy because nobody wants you to be on the field, right? Yeah. If you're on the field, people around here are sad. So at the very least, the thing that keeps you around is being likable. And I do wonder if this is what people are trying to put forward is the opposite for him, where people feel like he is some level of unlikable and they're like, I don't know that you're good enough to be starting caliber to where that would override it. We'll see.
Yeah, you talk a lot of ish, you got to back it up. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, again, when I talk about the juice being worth the squeeze and what you're saying, Reggie, like, hey, man, I don't feel like normally people want their backup quarterback. They want the backup quarterback to be quiet and insightful. Right. Like help the guy in front of you. Right. And
that's what Graham Mertz said in his interview once he was drafted is like, you know, get into that room and do whatever you can do to help the team win games.
And maybe he can become that, but he is not presented as that up until this.
No. What's crazy is even if he don't do anything, his like people are obsessed with him at this point now.
Yeah. Right.
Like you got a lot of celebrities like, I got to go to a Browns game.
There
now.
Are going to be Shador's Browns jerseys out here.
It's kind of like the Tebow thing.
They might
have the number one selling jersey right now.
I was going to say he might have the highest selling jersey.
No, it is. I looked at it yesterday. As of yesterday, he was number one. Cam Ward was number two.
But think about it.
No. He was number two. Travis Hunter was number one.
That makes sense.
Shador was two. Cam Ward was three.
Did we get a number on? I forgot to circle back around to what Travis Hunter's wearing on his back.
I thought it was two.
Okay. Yeah.
But either way, think about it. Tim Tebow, like, can you be the caliber of player that Tim Tebow is for as famous as he was? It's like, man, the juice not worth the squeeze. He's not good enough on our team. He might have some kind of function or some type of utility on the team. But for what he brings, for the attention, is it good enough? Is the juice worth the squeeze? I think it's a similar situation.
Shout out to Cam saying, I don't know. I want my backup quarterback to be like Jameis Winston personally. Oh, okay.
Yeah, but Jameis Winston also did all of those little things too. Like I think if you watch the Hard Knocks that they did on the AFC North,
right.
You can kind of get a sense for that Jameis Winston was also one of those guys. I'm not saying that Shador is not. He just has not presented that way.
Right.
And the league doesn't seem to view him that way. But no one has ever said that Jameis Winston wasn't, you know, a consummate teammate or that his personality wouldn't fit in well with what a backup quarterback role is.
Hey, Figgy, what's the best donut spot in Cleveland?
Donut spot? I don't know.
I'm like, whatever it is, I feel like Shador need to find that and bring that into the Cleveland Browns. Where is it? In Brea or whatever? Just keep bring them donuts in and let people see, oh, man, I like this guy. Because you know what people love at the office? The guy who brings breakfast.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, yeah, do that a little bit.
Don't bring everybody no Rolex or jewelry and stuff like that. Just bring some donuts and coffee.
Krispy Kreme.
Bring some food. Ain't nobody doing that.
Yeah.
That's not how you win over your teammates.
Jameis is different, but he's never given over or given off superiority complex. He's never really, I don't think, given
no.
that off.
And I felt like he accepted his role as a backup, too.
Yeah. He had to. Yeah. He definitely had to. 281, one gorilla versus 100 Tony Siragusas.
Siragusa would run out of gas.
Yeah. I don't think people realize how fast a gorilla is.
Exactly.
Like, he could literally just run through at least 50 of us. Minimum.
That's true.
Like, just run through us. And we'd be, like, incapacitated.
100 Larry Allens?
Again.
They're not fast
enough. Again.
I'm trying.
If you're fast enough, you're not big enough. And if you're big enough, you're not fast
enough. I'm just trying.
Not a man.
Yeah.
I'm trying. Larry Allen could run, though. That boy was, whew.
Draymond's?
And have y'all seen Gorillas Run?
No, I'm just saying I'd want to see the gorillas.
How quickly they get off the ball?
I'd want to see the gorillas do some work.
Great explosion.
Their get off is insane.
Incredible
insane.
Bend.
Insane.
Hips.
Strong bull rush.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. Good with their hands.
Very good with their hands. Unreasonably good with their hands. Yeah, all right.
Underrated footwork.
Like, 100%.
I'm telling you.
Motor is incredible. All right, you're in the loop here. On Sports Radio 610, as you can tell, we are being unserious today. But actually, I feel like we're going to get real serious because B. Scott literally has been waiting days for the opportunity to get off B. Scott's thoughts, and we'll give them to you next. Yep, he is indeed in the building, espousing the values of Silverback Gorillas and such. His name is Brandon K. Scott. You might know him as B. Scott from Hiram Clark. He has thoughts, and let's get to him. B. Scott, what's popping?
Man, I think the Texans got better. I think the Texans got better over the weekend.
All right, done. Overall, great thought. Let's go.
I'll explain why, but I was overall happy with what the Texans did. I think there's a lot of stuff that you could nitpick, a lot of parts about this, like the trading out of the first round. At the time, I didn't love it, but also I looked at the draft and everything that was happening before they actually made the trade and thought, man, a lot of the players that I would have liked, the names that I would have given you or that I did give you going into it, we're gone. And the mocks were kind of all over the place. We saw that play out in the way that that played out throughout the draft. The mocks were kind of all over the place, save for the like first, you know, four, five, six picks or so. Like right. It started to get real. I thought once Loveland, the tight end.
Yeah, Colson Loveland.
Once Colson Loveland went to the Bears.
Ten
to the Bears. I thought after that, you know, it started to get really kind of weird and just unpredictable of where guys would actually land.
Although Kelvin Banks at 9 to the Saints was an interesting one. And
actually, that's a good one. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, we played the audio of Ian Rappaport on Pat McAfee talking about the idea that, you know, the Colts kind of stopped right around that time trade-ups. I do wonder, we were talking about right around Colts and Loveland at 10. Right there was Kelvin Banks at 9, and I do wonder if that was what the calls for the Texans were to get up.
Could have been either one of them, to be honest. Banks. It would have been a great fit, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the Texans' calls stopped right there because it had to be one of those.
Yeah, I think that, honestly, that they did try, and I think they talked about this. They talked to pretty much every team in the league.
That boy was frustrated when he said it, too.
Yeah, I think they did try. They took the swing, and they missed, or for whatever reason, it did not work out, and then they got to a certain point. Now, I was one of those who, you know, the more Matthew Golden falls back. That's another one. Emeka Ibuka going before him and Matthew Golden lasting as long as he did.
Right.
Now my brain is turning like, okay, maybe that's somebody that could target. Obviously, Green Bay hadn't drafted a wide receiver in the first round since Jesus was a baby. It's been so long. They finally did that. So, like, you get why maybe they wouldn't want to trade with you. So once they got in that position and they trade back, I'm like, okay, well, I feel like you can still get a similar caliber player with the second pick in the second round as you could say around about 25. So you fast forward to the next day and Jaden Higgins, I think for that position, the second pick in the second round, that's about as pretty good of a receiver as you could ask for. I know that there were others that maybe you might have wanted, but when you watch him play and just overall kind of the haul of weapons that they got between Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel, his actual teammate, I feel like they did address some of the needs in terms of weaponry that they didn't have. They didn't have enough speed. They didn't have a viable enough option opposite of Nico Collins. I think between those two picks, they absolutely added that. And that's before I even get to the idea of Woody Marks being, to me, a potential option as a backup running back, which is something that they desperately
need. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I think we're going to talk about, you know, the potential of a better five-headed monster with these guys. You could easily argue that. But we never really dug into this. We mentioned it here and there. I mean, Jaden Higgins was that guy, right? That they said that Nick Casario said they had at 20, that they was still available, that they were considering at 25.
Who went ahead of him? Who was the pick ahead?
It had to be Jaden Higgins.
The Schwechinger, the linebacker out of UCLA, if memory serves.
So yeah, I got a tough time believing that would have been the guy.
I know damn well I didn't say his name right, but y'all know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. No, that was close. That was close enough. It was a linebacker. You said that part right, and I don't think they were targeting a linebacker.
So that alone tells you they have to be feeling pretty good about the whole deal.
I mean, watch him play. Go and look at the cut-ups, and I know everybody's highlights look good when you make them into highlights.
That's right.
But the thing about him is, he's got the size and the fluidity, like the way he moves for his size. I thought that it was actually Steve Smith and James Palmer who I thought did a really good breakdown.
Steve Smith loves him some Jaden Higgins.
And this was, I think, before he was actually picked.
Yeah.
So this is like, you know, pre-draft kind
of 3 weeks ahead too. Yeah. It's like, yo, this is a match made in heaven.
And Palmer, who's pretty connected and used to be here years ago and, you know, with the NFL Network, talks to people around the league, was saying that, hey, man, people do not want us to break this guy down because they don't want anybody to be talking about this kid from Iowa State, which is kind of one of the lesser talked about power, however many power conferences we got now, power conference type of.
I think we got four.
Yeah, it changes every year. So, like, we don't want this guy to be on people's radar.
Mm-hmm.
Don't break this guy down. But if you watch him, he's a 4'4 guy for his size, is 6'4, can move, is fluid. I think that they really came away pretty solid with this combination of guys that they got from Iowa State.
And one of the things with Jaden Higgins, it's kind of funny because there was a point in time, and we didn't actually bring this to air, and I don't know if I feel bad about it or what have you, but one of these Tuesdays, we were sitting here and we were talking about the possible overlap of skill sets if you get one of these big wide receivers. I think I had it more in the conversation of Tetairo McMillan, right? But the idea of, do you want to get another big X, considering that Nico Collins, and I thought something that you said has been kind of instructive for me, in addition to, I think there's been some good questions asked of Nick Caserio, alluding back to his time in New England. Don't do that, Lopez. But his time in New England with the ways that they've had some overlap with kind of slot guys, having multiple guys. And one of the things you were like is, that's fine. Give me two big guys, because Nico Collins is such a well-rounded wide receiver that he can be nominally the X, but also he could kind of do the Z things that you want.
Well, like Higgins can.
And then I think that's what makes it even better is it's not just that you got a big guy who goes and jump ball, but he does some of those same things too. So you have two guys that do that simultaneously.
It's the issue when guys get typecasted based off of their size.
Yes.
So like the big guy must be this big, stiff X receiver that you can't move around.
Right.
Or the little guy must be a slot guy who you can't put outside.
Although like Jalen Noll did have like 75% of his snaps.
He is a slot guy.
But for example, Christian Kirk.
Yeah. Tank Dell, I know Tank's injured, but Tank Dell was a good example of this on the inverse. Like,
it was always fun seeing national folks come in and be like, he's a slot guy. And you're like, oh, you actually have not watched him. He's on the outside all the time.
Never mind the fact that he's so small. Man, put him wide and let him do Tank Dell things. Mm-hmm. So, like, it is a typecasting. The fortunate part about the guys that the Texans have drafted is that between Nico Collins and Jaden Higgins, I think you got two guys that you can move around. I know at least one of them you can move around, even if the other one is somebody that you do have to stick over there for a little while. Like, to me, this was a question going in was, hey, would it be okay? I think Ron might have asked this on the drive.
Shout out, show.
He definitely asked me this, like, you know, in text message. Like, hey, can the Texans afford to not get a starter with that top pick? And I think Jaden Higgins is going to be a starter.
But he's a starter.
But I think it's also beside the point, because what they did was found at least two weapons that, you know, whether they start or not, whatever the configuration actually is going to be, and I do think he's going to be a starter. Mm-hmm. Whether he starts or not, he should be an immediate impact guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of the more, I mean, we're talking football here. So, like, that's the more, I think, instructive part. It's like, hey, is this guy going to be on the field when I need him to be?
For sure. No, absolutely. And like Lopez said, we'll dive more into that as we go on, because I think at noon we're going to break down the idea of that five-headed monster. Are we going to get part deux?
Yeah.
I know I didn't say that French properly. Any other thoughts when it comes to the draft? Because I feel like I've been doing this portion of the conversation where I'm just like, yo, those top three picks. There was six other ones too as well.
Oh, I don't do that.
But
what I'm saying is, once you get that far into it,
you might as well ask him to fight a silverback.
Well, I'm saying once you get that far into it, it's just a crapshoot. So it's like you're guessing. It's far less of an interesting conversation. Like anybody from the back end, like if you're Graham Mertz or like anybody from the back end of the draft is gonna be something, it'll be like a pleasant surprise.
All right, so no Luke Leahy insight, huh?
No. Best wishes to Luke Leahy, but no, man. No, hell no.
I got three kids,
a life, the world in front of me.
Yeah.
I'm not doing research. Show me something, Luke.
The one thing
we'll
that
see
I,
you in training camp.
The one thing that I'll say that
congratulations.
A little bit of a pushback. Frank Ross had a great draft. They got a lot of special team specialists.
I would expect nothing less. Frank Ross has been one of the better special teams coach in the game for pretty much as long as he's been here.
You know, they got Jalen Reed. I mean, just a special teams guy that's a demon. Who's the other, one of the other Jalens? Was it Smith? that's a kick returner. Knowles a kick returner.
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse there, but I'm definitely going to be confused because they already had a Jalen on the team.
Yeah.
And now they've added three more.
Yeah.
Plus a Jaden.
I said it's nicknames, man. It's about to be nickname time. Higgins, you about to be by your last name. Sorry, you about to be Hig or Higgins all the time.
Jalen, Jaden, Jalen, Jalen, and... Jalen.
Yeah, no, we're going to start calling y'all. Like, Petrie, you are five exclusively at this point. I know that they already kind of do that.
I'm him. I'm like, hey, y'all better. I'm the OG Jalen around here.
But in order to have equity.
Y'all is pretenders.
In order to have equity, can't nobody be Jalen no more. Ain't no Jalen's in here. You five, you Higgins. I don't know if we can call old boy Noel. I need to go look at his government and see if there's a middle name that's more sufficient here. But we just nicknames all around. Everybody, pick your nickname. Whether it's the middle name or what they called you by, did they call you June Bug or something? Because we calling you that. I can't call any more. No more Jalen's.
Hey, I text y'all my nickname for Ariante Ursary. Is that how you say it?
Well, yes, it is. But I don't think I remember this.
Well, because you can't say it on the FCC airwaves.
Oh,
that's a big MF.
Yes.
Analysis.
That's somebody that can fight a gorilla.
Hey, instant analysis.
They're the same height.
Hey, look, 100 Ursaries?
Yeah, okay.
If he got that dog in him, I like his chances better than most. Yeah.
Do you like him on the inside? Because I know that's been some of the conversation, especially with tackle. Like, Cam Robinson is holding down that left tackle spot where he typically plays. We know that Nick Caserio and this organization feels okay with moving guys. And I think the NFL in general has gotten more okay with moving offensive linemen out of what you would consider their prototypical position. Mm-hmm. Do you like the idea of him maybe playing a little bit of Gore?
It will be a training camp subplot for me.
Yeah.
Where is Ursary? Are they running him at tackle or are they trying him at guard because he's just so massive of a man? 6'6", 330 plus. So, like, he's just so big. Now, he hasn't played no guard, right? Mm-hmm. He's only really been a tackle.
Correct.
So, like, I think they're going to test him to see what he can do. Nick Caserio's talking
about
that.
Four out of the five positions on the line is going to be the story of the camp.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. But but the fact
Shout out to Cam Robinson missing the story of the camp.
Yeah.
The fact that they really didn't do a great job of addressing guard, but they went out and got a tackle who's just so big that looks like he could be a guard, or that they already got a tackle on the team that they've been playing at guard, that will be fascinating to watch.
Absolutely. Super fascinating. There's going to be a lot of time to get some feeling on that. Activities are already started, and I imagine rookie minicamp is coming pretty damn quickly. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Rail 610 from 713. One silverback gorilla versus 100 Larry and Staffords. All right, okay. You know who wants it more? My boy Larry, I'll tell you that for damn sure. All right, coming up next, let's get into what's popping, which, I'm going to be honest, I want to get more B-Scott's thoughts. We ain't talking no hoop. So let's get B-Scott's thoughts on the Rockets as well next. Yeah, let's get into what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610 as I will turn quickly to the Jim Adler of the Texas Hammer text line, 713-572-4610. Thank you, Jim. Where Ocho, I think, is going back and watching some of the Rockets game yesterday, and he watched the last shot for Sengun, and he's trying to understand why people are praising Draymond Green because he didn't do bleep.
Yeah.
And that's that was one of the things that I took away. We'll talk more about it as we go, but I think you want to talk about some of this is I just think Alperen Sengun, and I think I actually texted you about this in one particular thing. I would like him to get more dominant in that get to the spot that you want to and don't pick it up nearly as early.
Yep.
Was that part of some of your thoughts when you were watching this game yesterday?
Well, I would say definitely on that play in particular.
Like where has Brandon Pajemski or the final play?
Well, no, on the final play that Ocho's talking about, I thought that's a prime example of what you're saying, of picking the ball up early. I think Draymond does a thing where he's physical enough with you to where maybe you might quit on whatever move you're making a little early, or maybe more simply put, rush the shot or rush the move, so to speak. I think that's what happened there. But you're also correct on, like, taking advantage of the mismatch when it's Brandon Pajemski or really anybody that's not Draymond Green that's guarding you. They should be food. And I felt like he kind of would bail the matchup out a little bit. Even though, hey, when he starts to make his run or starts to really start contributing, that's when Draymond Green's got the five fouls and the technical and the flagrant and all of that, and he's on the bench. So a lot of his work was being done with Draymond out of there. And then when Draymond gets back in there, I think it was a lot harder for him to do what he was trying to do. But, I mean, the big takeaway from them being down 3-1, and especially after last night, is that, you know, this playoff series was a test for the Rockets, and they have failed it.
Well, like, it was a test for Jalen Green.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, it was a test for, I think, their best players.
Mm-hmm.
And Alperen Sengun, I feel like, we already knew, like, Alperen Sengun has been about, whether you love it or hate it, I think he's been about what you could expect based off of the data points that you have up until this point, been pretty consistent. The unfortunate part and the reason why it's a failure is so has Jalen Green. In the sense that he gave you a 38-point performance that helped you win the only game that you've won so far this series. But while you wouldn't necessarily have the data or use this data point throughout the regular season because it probably doesn't matter as much, but in the playoffs now, we can say it for sure, just do four games.
Yeah.
For every one 38-point Jalen Green game, you get three single-digit Jalen Green games. And that is the ebb and flow and the inconsistency, the one step forward, two step back nature of the Jalen Green experience so far. Does that mean that he's a lost player? No, not necessarily. But does that change the outlook and how you might go about building your team in the offseason or how you might strategize in the offseason? I think it absolutely
should. You put a lot out there that I really feel strongly about. I know Reggie does too, but
you don't know me.
In the grand scheme of things, Alperen Şengün he's way down. For me, I mean, he scored 31.
When you talk about problems or negatives,
or whatever, to me, he's way. You're right about some of the things he did. Both you guys, you know, picking up the ball too soon, all that. But that is picking nits, as far as I'm concerned, because the guy could score. He had a couple of amazing moves. He was by himself. If Fred VanVleet wasn't knocking down a three.
Which, can we stop? Can we pause real quick? Because Fred VanVleet caught some ire early on in the series.
I loved
that he got to the place where he was like, okay, I know that the schematics, the X's and O's of this, they're going to play me in a drop. What I'm going to do is coming off this pick and roll, I am shooting with this space, and he went crazy.
But here's the thing. You had Fred VanVleet with a spurt, you know, a couple of spurts, first half, second half.
Yep.
You had Amen Thompson. Reggie texted us, you know, hey, the Amen game is loading. Yeah. And I was like,
He finally started to figure it out after a rough start.
But then nothing for long stretches. It was Şengün. It was Şengün, and it was. I think the second most important player offensively was Steven Adams. Because the way that he commanded that they didn't double team opened everything up for Shane.
Oh, I think they confirmed that themselves by going to the hack of Steven Adams. That wasn't just to put him on the free throw line. That was to get his ass out the game.
Yes, it was. Absolutely.
You know, because they had the fouls to give. He wasn't going to the line at that point. Now, they've done it earlier in the series where he did go to the line.
Yeah, that was a non-shooting, no bonus.
It was get this guy off the court because nobody else in this building is as strong as him.
So Şengün was, to me, almost not a non-factor, but very way down. Yeah. To me, I mean, it's Jalen Green, and I hate to say it, I always hesitate. It's Ime Udoka, man. Mm. Like, you cannot start the first half and the second half getting outscored, 13-2 and 18-1?
Yeah.
You can't do that. You can't. And his offense was just clunky, as we just illustrated with Şengün pretty much being it. And then Jalen Green, I mean, it's indisputable now, unless you guys want to dispute it. He's not your number one.
No.
And I don't think he will be.
I want to make this point.
Please.
Like, honestly.
Please.
I think a lot of the issue is not as much what Şengün is or isn't, or even what Fred VanVleet is or isn't, but the fact that you are as reliant on them as you are.
Yeah.
And I think you should and would be less so if Jalen Green were better.
Absolutely.
He is the ceiling raiser and must be better.
Or at least he's been cast as a ceiling raiser.
No, he is supposed to be.
Yeah.
He is supposed to. Now, he might just flat out not be, okay?
No, I don't think he is.
But I think by design and ideally, he would be. And the fact that you rely on Şengün as much as you do, the fact that he and Fred VanVleet got to carry you as much as they have to, is I think, direct indictment and result of Jalen Green not quite measuring up to the standard that I think was set for him.
Yeah, the name that came to mind, and I think it's somewhat apt, I don't know if it's perfect, is Trevor Ariza. You remember that time, that stretch of time where the Rockets decided, let's give a shot and see if Trevor Ariza can be the lead dog on this team.
Yep.
And the answer was, not quite.
Yeah.
But like, he is much better situated as a supporting character, a high-level role player, is how I would kind of describe it, where the defense was really there, which that is one of the places where it doesn't really hit, but like, He can be that guy who jumps in and is like, oh, well, he gave us a night. That's what you've got in this series.
Yeah,
you got the Jalen Green night. The problem is, I don't know. I think he's miscast as that guy. And that was one of the big questions we have for this Rockets team all the way through the season is, do you have that guy that can be the tempo setter, especially in playoff basketball, which is different than regular season basketball?
Well, the issue with that comparison, though, is that, like, to Trevor Ariza's credit, he did do the role player things well. shoot threes, play defense. Mm-hmm. Like Jalen Green, he'll give you an effort on defense, but it's not like he's a spectacular defender necessarily. It's not his calling card per se.
No.
And then he's got one of the more inconsistent jump shots that you'll find. So like the point I'm making here is if he's not what he was supposed to be, which I think we're all agreeing that it doesn't look like he is, then what is he exactly?
I'm glad you asked.
That is a good question.
I mentioned this to Reggie. I want to get your thoughts on this. I think we know this. I don't think it's a question, no matter if he's 23 years old, because that's kind of silly to me. It's his fourth season in the NBA, man.
Yeah.
But okay. Well,
this was the 23-year-old test.
Yes. Yeah. So I think on a really good team that can make a run in the playoffs, he's at best a number two. On a great team, he's Brandon Podziemski. He's a guy that can win
a
game.
Did that hit you how it hit me?
Look, it doesn't sound great, but think about what they didn't. They refused to trade him. They refused. They had two offers, I believe. One was it Markkanen?
Yeah, it doesn't work, man, because he's a consistent shooter.
Well, okay, like, okay, you know, but score. Mean? Like I'm just saying score. Like your number three guy that can win you a game with a 27-point night, like he did last night. But he's not your number one or your number two.
Yeah, it's even hard to. I know he averaged 21, but it's even hard to call him a consistent scorer when his.
So you don't even think he's a Podziemski?
No. I think his ceiling and his actual talent is greater than that, but the results don't meet that because he's an inconsistent shooter. And for whatever reason, even an inconsistent finisher around the rim, mm-hmm. loose with the handle, like all of it is just like, it's just not consistent. Podziemski at least can consistently be the third or fourth best player on the team.
On a great team,
Jalen Green ebbs and flows from, hey, I can be the best player on the floor no matter who else is on the floor. Even if Steph is on the floor, I can be the best player on a given night to, hey, I can get outplayed by Buddy Hield in back-to-back games. Mm-hmm. I can get outplayed by Brandon Podziemski in back-to-back games. And the variance there is just too wide to even – try to go further with the thought experience or thought experiment. It's like, hey, maybe we should just punt on this and move on because we're not exactly sure what we're dealing with.
Yeah, and consistency is one of those things that I don't know how you project it. That's the tough part is that I don't know how you project, okay, this will stabilize because that's the thing that he's missing. He's not missing the ability when you talk about the athleticism, when you talk about even the shooting, even the playmaking. You're seeing that he has some of that in his bag. He has enough to make some of this go. I just wonder – where do you go with the consistency? But I really don't want to make it all about him because, I mean, it definitely matters, but it feels like also you come back to the margins. There's so many marginal things.
Well, coaching, Lopez mentioned coaching.
Did not get to
that wasn't great. You know, like I thought there were a number of times when you could have picked apart some of the decisions from Emilio, some of the lineups that I saw out there. I was like, so what's the
– Yeah.
You and I did this too on Saturday, I think it was, when we were watching game three. It's like, okay, so – what's this lineup? What are they trying to accomplish? What are they trying to do? And I think I do think a lot of that has to do with Jalen Green because when you don't know what you're trying to do, you should be able to go to what you hang your hat on. And that has been, to Şengün's credit, Alperen Şengün. Like when they don't know what to do, it's like, hey, let's get the ball to Alperen Şengün. Yeah. Or we don't like this as much, let Fred make a decision. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, there would be so much less of that if the most talented guard/wing player more so consistently played like that. Like Amen Thompson, once you get to the second half, started to, and he's still a raw player, I think, but started to play like that or started to at least take on that. And it seemed like, say for game two and all of these other games, unfortunately, and this was a test, unfortunately, Jalen Green has shrunk in the moment.
So real quick before we let this particular instance of talking about the Rockets peter out, what have you made about Amen Thompson in this series to this point? Because I feel like he has been a guy that I know me personally, I don't want to speak for anyone else. I've kind of allowed to kind of slide under the radar with some of these things. His defense, you haven't felt the impact of his defense, I think, until last night.
Last night, yep.
And then offensively, I don't know what you were going to expect coming in, but I also don't think that this was something that you were happy about for the most part. With the offensive side of this, like, what have you made of Amen Thompson thus far in this series?
Yeah, I liked the defense last night. I thought it looked as good as it's looked probably since the last regular season game that they played. But, you know, offensively, I would say he looked rough and lost up until the second half of last night. So I think overall it has been an underwhelming series for Amen Thompson, but certainly last night he gave you a chance or helped you have a chance to win the game.
I liken it to a football reference. You know how sometimes you're really not in your game until you get hit hard? I think he's really not in the game until he attacks the basket two or three times. Yeah. Like you know, you run something off the baseline, you know, he just puts his head down. He really has been kind of timid, which yeah. doesn't really jibe with what he really is, because he's, you know, obviously can be a monster, but he's got to attack early. You got to get him somehow, some way, attacking the basket early in every game, every half.
Dude, when he's downhill, he is a problem for somebody. Yeah. Sometimes because he's, you know, one-track
minded. It gets him going.
And it can be a problem for you because he's a little out of control. But when he does have it, like, downhill, Amen Thompson is an issue and was an issue last night. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, in game three, it was part of their game plan to, like, just let him shoot and shoot from point-blank range and challenge them to beat them that way. And he could not do it. So, like, his offensive game obviously has to become more refined, but I think it's promising.
Okay. All right. B. Scott's thoughts, and we appreciate you, B. Scott. Actually, real quick, because there's a couple texts that came in real quick, and I want to – because I opened up the can of worms of, like, kind of comparison. Mm-hmm. I said Ariza. I know that doesn't fit very well. Someone said he might be kind of Brandon Jennings, or someone said he's more athletic D'Angelo Russell. Which of those do you like more, or do you like either of those at all?
Yeah, Brandon Jennings was more of a – both of those guys – both of those – honestly, he could stand to study both of their handle. Like, honestly, the turnovers early in the game or that
five
point –
five turnovers last night.
Dude, you get to the third quarter, and he's got more turnovers than points or turnovers than shot attempts, something like that. More turnovers than a key stat offensively that he was supposed to have. And it's like, well, wait a minute. That's got to do with that loose handle. He's got to get it tighter. So I probably like the – I don't like the Brandon Jennings one at all, so I'd go D'Angelo Russell. But honestly, man, I would trust both of those guys handling the ball more so than I have watching Jalen Green in this series.
Which probably speaks a little bit more to the lack of a lead guard that you feel great about as well, with all due respect to the game that Fred VanVleet gave you last night. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Always, always an appreciation to our guy, B. Scott, for joining us on a Tuesday. B. Scott from Hiram Clark. You can catch his work both on SportsRadio610.com, also Houston Chronicle. My man, always working. We appreciate you giving us some time, man.
Man, this was fun, man. A fun week. Appreciate
always, always. And if you didn't learn anything else in this hour, you don't want it with the Silverback. You just don't. All right, coming up next, let's circle back around to the Texans because – two of their first three draft picks in the 25 draft were wide receivers, and so there's a whole bunch of them on the roster. We're very early, and there's going to be a lot of time, a lot of exercises that give us some insight into this. But how do you see this wide receiver room playing out? And will the five-headed monster actually stick this time? We'll talk about it next.